There are millions of cases of cholera and tens of thousands of related deaths worldwide each year, and the magnitude of outbreaks continues to increase. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Edward Ryan, director of global infectious diseases at Massachusetts General Hospital. Dr. Ryan has co-authored a perspective article about the continued challenges facing global cholera control. Dr. Ryan, what areas of the world and what populations tend to be most affected by cholera?
So most cases are currently reported from Africa, specifically sub-Saharan Africa, as well as Asia, especially South Asia. But large swaths, there's over 50 countries currently globally that are considered endemic for cholera. With regard to the type of individuals who are most at risk, they tend to be the most impoverished or disenfranchised individuals on the planet. And that largely relates to the fact that cholera is transmitted by unsafe water. And so, since that's one of the fundamental aspects of economic development, individuals who don't have access to safely managed water or sanitary conditions are most at risk of cholera.
You say in your article that after the 2010 cholera outbreak in Haiti, public health officials recognized that deployment of an effective vaccine could contribute to cholera response and prevention. So what progress has been made in terms of vaccination since then?
A great deal of progress. So the first was the recognition that vaccines should be part of a holistic plan to address cholera control. And the good news in 2010 to 13 range was that there was already a cholera vaccine that had been developed, an oral cholera vaccine that was comprised of killed organisms that people could ingest. And so that vaccine was effectively taken off the shelf and moved forward. So the first was moving it into larger scale production and increasing the quantity of the vaccine. In about 2013 or so, approximately 5 million dosages of the vaccine were available or could be made on an annual basis. And a great deal of work has gone into increase the manufacturing capability so that now we have about 65 million dosages of that vaccine or comparable vaccines made annually. The vaccine was not only scaled up with regard to production itself, but simpler versions of the vaccine were developed and tested and have been deployed. The original oral cholera vaccine had a number of strains and biotypes and serotypes, and it was thought that a simpler version could be made, which obviously decreases production costs and increases production capacity. So those vaccines also have been endorsed by the Global Task Force on Cholera Control, also known as the GTFCC. And in a partnership with over 50 organizations, including Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, a program was put together to use OCVs, which is what we call oral cholera vaccines, as part of a holistic approach, including with early case detection, outbreak response, appropriate education, improvements in water and sanitary conditions, surveillance systems, response systems at the national and sub-regional and sub-national levels. And so a great deal of progress has been made since OCVs were first rolled out in 2013 or so. It's estimated that approximately 8 million cases of cholera have been averted and over 100,000 deaths have been averted. So that's the current status of where we are. I'll go a bit further and say, but it also underlines one of the shortcomings with the current control programs, which is that we don't have enough vaccines. OCVs, even with the simpler version, current global capacity is about 65 million doses per year. But it's estimated when you look at the use that we think is required, both for preventive and reactive campaigns, that we need about 120 million dosages per year. So a preventive campaign is when we roll the vaccine out in an area that we anticipated a cholera outbreak, either because of the rainy season coming up, previous outbreaks in that zone, civil or natural disasters or unrest. So those are preventive campaigns. We also have reactive campaigns where we roll the vaccine out to an ongoing outbreak in a given area. And it's estimated that we need at least 120 million dosages per year to fully address what we perceive as the current need. So that's one of the shortcomings of where we are in cholera vaccines. But a great deal of progress has been made over the last 10 or 15 years.
So what other approaches to vaccination might provide better protection, particularly for young children?
So there are two big elephants in the room with regard to cholera vaccines. One is we currently don't have enough for meeting current global needs, and that will only get worse. Let me touch base on that before we go into the children and perhaps next generation vaccines. Even if we don't have next generation vaccines and we currently go with what we have, not only do we need to basically double our production to meet the current need, but it's estimated that perhaps 1 to 2 billion more people will join the planet in the next 10 to 20 years. And if that occurs, many of those individuals will live in informal settlement areas, in areas of the world that don't have adequate sanitation or safely managed water. And as such, the global need will probably increase even further than where we are. You raise a second question, which is, well, how good is the vaccine? And the vaccine is good. It has been transformative, as I've mentioned, with tens of thousands of deaths averted. But the vaccine does have shortcomings. It's about 60 to 85% protective for all comers in a community over about a 1 to 5 year time period. So that sounds pretty good, especially if you're about to go into an outbreak. But there are some holes in there. Young children under the age of 5 years only have a protective efficacy or vaccine efficacy of about 35 or 40%. And with a two-dose regimen and with a one-dose regimen, it hasn't been shown to be protective in young children. Now, this becomes important because it's estimated that a third of all cholera cases on the planet affect children under the age of 5 years. And such children are a particular risk for dying since dehydration can take a particular toll on them. And so we do need to not only increase our supply of vaccines, but we also need to generate next generation vaccines that could perhaps address this issue in young children.
And then getting back to clean water and sanitary options, what strategies do you see that could help expand those options around the world, including for the people in the informal settlement areas that you talked about?
So this is a complicated area. So we refer to this area as WASH. And so you'll see that abbreviation, and that stands for water and sanitation and hygiene. And there's much work that is done in this area. And at the end of the day, you can do local things, helping with hand hygiene, access to soap, access to what we call adequate sanitary facilities, not a pit latrine, not open defecation, et cetera, and safely managed water that can be both generated and stored safely. And there's a lot of work that's done in this area. To be honest with you, it's very labor intensive. It's very hard to maintain. And the best solutions are engineering solutions, whether that is getting safely managed water to individuals where they live and adequate sanitary facilities that can remove waste and keep it separate from both the water and the food supply. This is a big issue. It's estimated that about 2 billion people on the planet of the 8 billion currently do not have access to safely managed water. And it's estimated that about 3 billion people on the planet do not have access to safely managed hygiene. It's also estimated that over 350 million people defecate in the open on a daily basis. So there's a lot that has to be done in this area. Best estimates are that we would need to invest about $1.4 trillion at the global level to sort of meet the Millennium Development Goal for 2030. And that would be about a six-fold increase over the current expenditures. So I don't think that's particularly likely. And to put these numbers in perspective, let's assume that there's only 2 billion people on the planet who we want to get safe water to, because we know that's the current number. Forget the 2 billion that might join us in the next 10 or 20 years who also won't have safe water. Let's just focus on those first 2 billion. It would require bringing online safe water for 100,000 people every day, every week, every month, 100,000 for the next 50 years. That just shows you the magnitude of what has to be done. And it's in that context, and obviously safe water, adequate sanitation will have a slew of health benefits way beyond cholera, both for other intestinal infections and other mucosal infections. But the reality is we're looking at decades, if not longer, till we are able to do that as a species on this planet. And in the meantime, we'll have to do Band-Aids. And part of those band-aids are vaccines. Part of those band-aids are local responses, local education, and local interventions.
So finally, how have shifts in multilateral cooperation and funding affected cholera control efforts in recent years? And what opportunities do you see for collaboration today?
It was really an international response after the large outbreak of cholera in Haiti in 2010 that pulled all these partners together, over 50 organizations working with ministries of health and national health programs for those across the globe and those especially most affected by cholera. And a great deal has been accomplished, as I've mentioned. One of the main components for delivering cholera vaccines is support from Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance. And the Gavi budget has been significantly strained in the recent past. And there are going to be changes for what and how Gavi will be able to support. And remember that portfolio that Gavi works with is across many infectious processes. And so it's unclear how that will impact vaccine uptake and enrollment across a range of illnesses, including cholera. And as I mentioned, this is going to be a decade-long process, and not just across Gavi and across multilateral cooperations and financing, but we do need better cholera vaccines. To go back to what we were talking about before, those young children, well, a great deal of progress has been made in the last 10 or 15 years. The immune response that appears to protect against cholera is an antipolysaccharide response that targets the sugar that surrounds the organism. And unfortunately, children don't develop good immune responses to polysaccharides because the T-cell independent antigens. And so next generation vaccines really will need to induce high-level, durable, mucosal antipolysaccharide responses. And there's a number of good candidates and adjuvants, et cetera, that are being developed, but not just at the implementation level, but a fair amount of support. If it doesn't come now, we will be set back decades with regard to what could be developed to further act as a band-aid for the next 25 or 50 years and to prevent especially the death of young children in impoverished communities around the globe.
Thank you, Dr. Ryan.